This past week, our pastor's book group met to discuss a book called Having Nothing, Possessing Everything by the Reverend Michael Mather. Mather serves as the head pastor of Broadway United Methodist Church in Indianapolis, which is a large, historical, wealthy, white church in what used to be a large, historical, wealthy, white neighborhood. Mather's book explores what a church like theirs does when a neighborhood changes and shifts, when the neighborhood demographics no longer mirror the demographics of the people who worship within their walls. Mather's book discusses how his church moved from a mission program rooted in charity to programs rooted in relationship, where they truly got outside their church walls, they got to know the folks living around them, and they invested in the amazing giftedness right there in their own neighborhood. It's a great, challenging read, and it's a book that is full of stories. One of the stories that he tells comes from his own childhood. He writes that it was on one of those incredible summer nights in 1970 when he was sitting on the front porch of his house while his brother, Alan, was riding his bicycle in the street in front of them. His brother was 6 years old. He wrote, "I don't know if I heard the crash, but I know that everything sped up." He said that his mother ran out the front door right past him, and she called out, "Somebody get help," on her way down to the street. Mather said that he saw the car, that he could see his brother's bicycle, that he could see literally all of the neighborhood pouring out of their homes to come and try to help, but that he stayed put, frozen, terrified of what might have happened to his brother. The next thing that he knew, a babysitter was there to stay with him while his parents rode in the ambulance with his brother. And his parents later called the babysitter just to check in and make sure that everything was okay. And he could hear through the receiver on the phone his brother crying as they were treating his wounds. But then, 2 days later, it was his brother's birthday. And everyone, including Alan, was home. He was bandaged up a little, but he was there. Dinner was over, and the cake for his birthday was coming. But right before they began to sing, a knock came at the door, and his father stood up to answer, and after a little conversation in the doorway, his father came back to the table with a young man. Mather said that this man wore his gloom like a yoke. His head was bent, and he carried a hat held right in front of him. He introduced himself, saying that he was the driver of the car that had hit Alan, and that he wanted to apologize. Alan, being 7, quickly accepted the apology because he wanted to get to the cake part. But then his mother did something incredible. She said, "Please stay and have some birthday cake with us. It's Alan's birthday." The man was visibly embarrassed at this suggestion. He hung his head even lower than before, but his mother and father insisted. And so sheepishly, he lowered himself into a chair right at their table. Then the candles were lit, and the cake came in. Alan's face lit up, and everyone around that table sang happy birthday to the boy that they were all so happy was still alive. Hospitality is an incredible thing. Jacques Derrida once wrote that hospitality has the same root word as hostage, meaning that part of hospitality means allowing your life to be held captive by another. It's incredible to me how in the book of Acts, over and over and over again, we get these long, dramatic stories, these stories about people's conversion experiences. And what happens at the end of each one? They sit down for a meal together. They sit down at table with one another. They let go of whatever barriers had been holding them back up until that point, and they give in to hospitality. They let the other become a part of their life. And not just any part. It's not just the when it's convenient to pencil somebody in part of your life. But like that birthday party, they allow the other into the intimate corners of their life. Last week, it was Lydia who was baptized and then lavished hospitality on Paul and his friends. This week, it's the jailer. And it's not just any jailer, but it's the jailer who just before had held Paul and Silas, who had held them captive. Who knows what this man had done to them while they were in his jail? Who knows what kind of abuse they may have experienced at his hands? And yet the story ends with him asking them the question, "What must I do to be saved?" And after Paul spoke to them about Jesus, it says the jailer took him and Silas, that he washed their wounds, that they brought him to his house, and that they spread a table before them. And then everyone rejoiced, singing together. This morning, we're reminded also of the disciples who in our reading from John for today are also gathered around a table as Jesus prays that final prayer. There they are, gathered at table together one last time. There they are, freshly foot washed and fed, but with one fewer disciple than before, Judas having already left to set in motion Jesus' arrest. There they are, holding the weight of all that Jesus has taught them in this final night of teaching, all that he has said to them about loving one another. And then he prays aloud, right in front of them. But he doesn't pray for himself. He prays for those disciples. And what he prays for them is unity, oneness, oneness with God and with one another. Jesus prays that they might know how intimately they are connected to God, just as Jesus is. But also, he prays that they might know how intimately they are connected to one another. May they be one, Jesus prays, just as you and I are one. Or as Derrida's definition of hospitality suggests, may we allow ourselves to be bound together, realizing that, as Desmond Tutu often says, I am because we are. You see, that is what Acts has shown us again and again. that for the early church, the way of Christ wasn't just about a conversion of belief. It was about a conversion of one's whole life. It was about allowing one's life to be taken hostage by something bigger than themselves. About finding your individual identity through acknowledging your connectedness to all the people around you. Acts paints a picture for us of how people responded when they learned about Jesus, how they heard the call to follow the way. And their reactions were powerful. They were like those disciples along the beach who just dropped their nets and followed. The people of Acts did the same. And we can still do the same. We can still set our agendas aside so that God can put us on a new course. We can still open ourselves up to the people around us. We can learn their stories. We can listen to their dreams. We can still sit at table with people we may not know and find ourselves surprised by how connected we are. Because the table is set. The candles are lit. The party is ready to go. And despite whatever it is that we've done, or whatever barriers might be holding us back from the people around us, the God who loves us is ready to answer the door and welcome us to that table, to pull out a chair and to offer us welcome, and to invite us to join in the song. Glory be to the God who embodies hospitality, who extends hospitality, and who commissions us to offer hospitality to one another. Amen.